So a quick thank you to our sponsor, Careerist, before we dive into today's episode. Because not everyone wants to spend their time learning how to code to get that elusive career in tech. And with Careerist QA Bootcamp, you don't have to. In just 4 months, you can have live training, a remote internship, and a career coaching that sets you up for success. Because in a world of job layoffs, QA is one of the fastest growing fields in tech. And there are currently 37,000 openings in the US right now, and with salaries up to $105,000. And Careerist grads, they're working at companies in 42 states, and with a very highly respectable 4.7 star Trustpilot rating, I think it's clear the model seems to work. And remember, if you don't land a job within a year, you get your tuition fees back. So what's the catch? Well, the only catch really is that the seats for the next class won't last. So you'll find the link in the show notes. Check it out. Let me know how you get on. Maybe I can get you on the podcast when you get that career in tech and tell me about your journey. But now it's time to get straight into the discussion with my guest today. How do you defend against fraud when AI is giving criminals the exact same upgrade that it's giving businesses? That's the dilemma facing banks, telecoms, and indeed consumers like you and I today. But Paul Weathersby, Chief Product Officer for Identity and Fraud at Experian, he spent 2 decades watching this fight evolve from a simple detail checks to an arm race where synthetic identities, deep fakes, and SIM swaps, they're the weapons of choice now. And in just 1 year, AI-driven fraud has jumped from 23% to 35%. And with SIM swap attacks spiking by over 1,000%, how do you build defences that adapt in real time without making life unbearable for us in the office or as customers? These are just a few of the things we will discuss today, but enough scene setting for me. Let's get Paul onto the podcast now. So a massive warm welcome to the show. Can you tell everyone listening a little about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, hello. So I'm Paul Weathersby. I'm Chief Product Officer for Identity and Fraud for the UK and Ireland within Experian. Within my role, it obviously covers identity and fraud, but also included is financial crime compliance and employee background checking. Myself, I've worked in the identity and fraud industry for over 20 years, watched the evolution of what's really needed to do to stop fraud. So 20 years ago, it was more of a case of verifying that a person's details were correct. And in most cases, that was enough to prevent fraud. Now it's a lot more complicated. And I'm sure we'll get into more of that detail today.
We really will. And one of the reasons I was excited to get you on the podcast today is I was reading a few weeks ago, the latest Experian fraud and FinCrime report shows AI-related fraud has risen from, I think, 23% to 35% in just a year. So what's driving this sharp increase?
That's right. So I think it's similar to what we see generally. So the use of AI within general business is increasing. Fraud to a certain extent is a business for fraudsters. So really what it's doing is it's creating a lower barrier for entry for fraudsters to commit fraud. So for example, providing easier ways to create fake documents, whereas you can imagine before AI, it was a complicated process in order to try to produce something that looked like a realistic passport. AI can assist with that and make it both easy to do and quick and accessible. If you can remember how email scams looked, it was quite easy to spot one because it was riddled with spelling mistakes, didn't look like the brand that it was trying to represent. With AI, fraudsters are able to make those emails look and read perfect. So I think kind of they're seeing the benefits of using AI to facilitate fraud. And I think that it's really kind of the increase is very similar to what we see in the use of AI across general business. They treat it as a business.
And I suppose the big question is, how exactly are criminals exploiting things like generative AI to carry out fraud? And what are the kind of tactics that you're seeing emerge there? I would imagine it's constantly evolving, but what are you seeing?
Yeah, I think that there's many ways. So I think across the different disciplines of what AI can do. So as we touched on just there, so the use of AI in order to produce fake documents. So it's possible to kind of provide a small amount of detail and an image into a prompt, and then get a document that looks very realistic, which can then be used to get around some of the document authentication checks which are present at the moment. So, without AI, that process of producing a realistic looking document was quite difficult, and the measures that were in place to check a document, verify that the document is the same through selfie, was quite an effective stop. So what we're finding is it's now harder to prevent attacks using documents because of the ease of using AI within documents. We're also seeing it within voice. So there was or still is a lot of voice related fraud prevention mechanisms. So like verifying the identity of an individual using voice. We've seen that AI can replicate someone's voice, so kind of getting a small signature of a person talking can then be used to replicate the voice and potentially get around some of those voice authentication systems. I think it when in the opening question we touched on phishing. I think what's allowing them to do is to perfect those phishing emails, but also to generate them in much higher volume. So we're seeing an increase in volume as well as the quality improving. I think another area is in synthetic identities. We're seeing a pattern of where fraudsters are able to complete identities where they wouldn't necessarily have had them before. So, for example, they would obtain the high-level details like name, date of birth, and address off the dark web, then use AI to fill in some of the gaps that they might not have. So kind of, provide like realistic previous addresses or provide documents that match to it, other documents that match the base identity in order to complete an identity, which then looks full, which is a mix of some of the parts are stolen, some of the parts are infilled using synthetic identities. I think one of the more interesting areas, which I think I'll go into a bit more detail, is using AI in order to automate some of the practices or some of the content that's available on the dark web. So if we focus a little bit more into the situation to begin with, so what we've seen is that unauthorized SIM swaps have increased by over 1,000%. So also mentioned in the Experian fraud and fincrime report from 2025. SIM swap, just to clarify what that is when the mobile service is transferred from one SIM to another, which ordinarily you would do on occasion, like maybe if you lost the SIM, the customer has a genuine need to transfer it to a new SIM. What fraudsters do is they contact the mobile operator and request to move the SIM from the customer's SIM to a SIM that they possess, and therefore taking control of the mobile service. Now, they do this because a lot of the authentication systems rely on receiving an SMS message in order to verify the identity of the individual. So a latest attack that we're seeing is actually, the fraudsters are targeting, or what it appears like, they're targeting the mobile phone and email providers first to gain control of those secondary authentication factors, and then quickly going on to perform an attack to gain access to other accounts. Now, what appears to be happening behind the scenes is whether using AI or general automation or not, but certainly they appear to be very well coordinated. So they're not randomly going to the mobile network operators and transferring SIMs of random accounts, then trying further. They seem to already have partial access to like a different account, which then requires the phone. And they, because of the coordination, it appears like there's some sort of orchestration happening on the dark web data in order to find the particular accounts that are more vulnerable, and then specifically targeting like mobile operators, which have weaker controls that they know they can get around. So I think that's quite a development, which has a like a longer explanation to understand what's really understanding here. But it's a more recent thing that we're seeing, which is actually kind of causing the rise in SIM swap, unauthorized SIM swap, is because it's essentially used as an authentication method.
Yeah, that is a frightening prospect. I think for most of us and most people listening, when they have something with their bank, credit card, or just about any account that you can mention, you get those text message ways of authenticating your account. So when that goes wrong, then, yeah, it's a huge problem. I'm curious, just the migration towards eSIMs, does that make it easier for the attackers or harder, do you know?
It's similar. So if the hacker is able to gain access to the mobile operator and convince them that they are the account holder, like whether it's on a physical SIM or an eSIM, then the process is similar. Perhaps it's made even quicker for them that they don't need a physical SIM to transfer it to. It can then be delivered over a QR code and away they go. So I think a warning sign for anyone that's listening, like if your mobile phone service stops working, that should be a priority to rectify it, because it can mean your other accounts are vulnerable.
Wow. Okay. Incredible. Frightening words there. And of course, when it comes to emerging technologies, it's always been a game of cat and mouse between the good guys and the bad guys. So on the flip side, how are businesses deploying AI and machine learning to better fight back, particularly when it comes to reducing false positives and ultimately improving real-time detection too?
So I think when the more of the tools became mainstream, I think as an industry, we were quite excited about the things that we would now be able to do in order to prevent fraud. No, it wasn't long before we were starting to see that, you know, actually these same tools were being used by fraudsters as well, which we've just touched on. But I think kind of generally, we're able to improve the models that we deploy. So getting a deeper understanding of what we need to do to increase fraud detection and reduce false positives. We're seeing a lot of improvements within the fraud investigation process. So using AI, generative AI and agentic AI in order to automate some of the more manual steps in the investigation, thereby reduce the cost of investigation, which gives firms the option to potentially kind of lower their tolerance of what would normally be a false positive, because they can manage more within the investigation process, or simply just save some money within the investigation process itself. Some of the techniques to identify fraudulent documents have greatly improved, so that there's a lot more that you can do with these newer technologies, which is a good thing, because the fraudsters are also kind of using AI to create fake documents, but thankfully there's a lot more that can be done to detect whether a document is fake, to detect whether the image, the selfie image being presented is a real image, or whether, you know, it's actually kind of been overlaid or manipulated with. So there's a lot more that's being done there. I think there's a lot more that can be done actually in the governance process. So one of the challenges in kind of deploying updated fraud models is making sure that you've done your documentation. It kind of meets the governance requirements. And it might seem like an unrelated thing, but the time to respond to a new attack vector has been reduced as a result. So if you can make that governance process quicker, you can get new models deployed faster. Obviously, we work within the financial services industry, so we need to make sure that the models deployed don't harm end consumers, and that actual process has been reduced, making it a lot faster to respond to new attacks.
And I must admit, you set off a few alarm bells in my head a few moments ago, talking about how multi-layered authentication is becoming more important, especially with threats like SIM swapping and identity theft there. So what strategies are proving most effective right now?
So I think multi-layered authentication strategy is certainly necessary. So just to cover what that is kind of using multiple approaches in order to confirm an identity, rather than just relying on a single method. A single method might be a username and password. I think in the example we spoke about earlier, we spoke about how, you know, like an SMS message is used as a second factor. But what we're now seeing is, you know, that in itself might not just be enough. I think as well as being multi-layered, I think what it really needs to be now is a dynamic and adaptive multi-layered approach, which means it should respond to the risks and change the process according to the risk that it sees. So you might, for example, do a primary first level scan, which could be a check to see whether the SIM within the mobile number that the customer presents has actually changed service recently, which is something you can check through the Mobile Connect services. If it has checked, then relying on the SMS messages could then be considered to be unreliable. So, like, being able to respond to the information that you see is certainly important in a modern day approach to preventing authentication problems. I think what we're also seeing is an increased use of behavioral biometrics. So it was always there, it was always used. But I think to really get a deep understanding of whether you're still in touch with the customer or whether the intentions of the individual are genuine, and behavioral biometrics combined with a multi-layered and dynamic approach is certainly becoming more effective to stopping this new type of fraud.
And of course, we see stories like this on our news feeds every day. And I'm curious, from a business perspective, how has AI-driven fraud become such an expensive challenge for organizations and consumers in the UK? What are you seeing here?
So I think it is expensive, and I think because really it kind of hits at both sides of the equation. So you're getting increased financial losses. So more fraud is being created, but also that because the AI is driving a lot of automation, it's driving a lot more cases and driving up the cost of investigation. So with more attempts happening, we're seeing kind of, you know, higher losses and then a higher cost of actually kind of investigating the cases as well. So I think that as well as higher volume, the sophistication of the attacks is becoming harder as well. So they're able to kind of get deeper into the process. I think the ultimate outcome is that, you know, if fraud is successful, then those cases need to be investigated. And I think kind of driven by the higher volumes and sophistication put together with that is what really makes it a challenge. I think from a regulatory perspective as well, that, you know, there's a duty of care passed on from the FCA, which must be adhered to. So, yeah, that we have to kind of remember, you know, that these cases are real people with impact, and those people expect a high quality process. The high quality process to complete end to end is also expensive. So I think it's those factors combined together: the sophistication, higher volume, and then the duty of care that financial services organization has, and trying to manage all three of those aspects together is really what's driving the cost up.
And as a solutions, not problems kind of guy, I've got to ask, how can smart investment in things like data and analytics, how can that create a more cost-effective defense while still protecting the customer experience? Because that is often a tricky balance too.
Yeah, I think that there's lots that can be done. I think it changes the dynamic. So from a fraud manager's perspective, what the main things you're really monitoring are the direct cost of the losses, the cost of managing the cases, so providing performing the fraud investigation and the cost of that aspect, against the cost of the actual solutions that you buy to influence either one of those. So I think the balance is changing with a higher volume at the moment. I think what it gives is an opportunity to spend more on the modeling. So to try to stop some more of it up front. If you can stop things getting through the front door, and, you know, effectively stop the fraud earlier, it allows you to reduce the cost of the investigations, which in this higher volume scenario is really starting to make a difference. So I think, you know, there's data, there's a lot of data that Experian provides that can help with that first stage, to try to prevent the fraud from getting through the front door in the first instance. I think there's probably things that the industry can do as well. So cross-industry intelligence, so sharing the fraud signals across industry will certainly help everyone that contributes and shares information. We can also focus more on graph and network analytics. So rather than focusing on trying to find individuals, focus on trying to find fraud rings. So they most of the time cases are connected. It's a group of people, normally a small group of people trying to attack in a specific way. And you can find the patterns and actually get ahead of it and stop them before they try to do it.
And on top of all these threats and trying to respond accordingly, there's also the small matter of compliance to deal with. So what are the biggest hurdles businesses are facing right now in achieving cost-effective AML compliance? And also, how can AI maybe help overcome some of these hurdles too?
So I think you're right. There is a huge cost in meeting the regulatory expectations, and I think the compliance processes are generally quite manually driven. So there's a lot of manual time that needs to go into it, and with higher volumes and potentially like high levels of false positives, that really kind of drives the cost to compliance up. I think AI can certainly help with a lot of the manual processes. So it can help with the simple things, kind of collation of information, summary of you know, the information that's on the screen to point out the things that are important, to speed up the manual and investigation and research that's required to review each case. Can automate the steps, automate the steps in between to make it faster. Can assist with the writing of suspicious activity reports or SARs to speed up that process there. I think in data in general, Experian are helping in a fairly unique way to look at data flags that can contribute to enhancing the overall supply of the AML compliance process. So ordinarily with data updates, an organization would approach the managing of that data from an A to Z type of approach. So understanding what records have changed and then work through them in an unordered approach just to get all of the record changes managed, which works, but it has a high manual burden in order to review and manage all of those changes. Experian are looking to really change the way that we do this by prioritizing the record changes and the data flags that are coming out to highlight the ones which are the highest risk so that the customers can prioritize how they manage it and get on to managing the risk more effective. So I think there are techniques that can be used both to, you know, improve the manual processing of the compliance process, but also that we can get more intelligent with data and how we look at the risk which comes from the data flags that we see.
And with what 2026 being just on the horizon, if we look ahead, how do you see this AI arms race between criminals and businesses? How do you see this further evolving over the next few years? And anything alarming or anything to be positive about, maybe?
So I think that certainly we're in the middle of an arms race, I would say, and I think it's got no indication that it's going to slow down anytime soon. I think kind of what we've seen so far is that we're seeing kind of more sophistication in the attacks that we see using AI. We're seeing kind of, you know, increased velocity of attacks and you know, more to deal with. I think that's only going to continue. I think what we'll start to see is the regulation catching up as well. So I think a lot of the regulation is still dependent on the old processes and the old attacks that we were seeing. Quite encouraged to see some of the work that the FCA are doing around, you know, facilitating this testing. So they've got the AI labs and the supersized sandbox, which is allowing organizations to test things in this high velocity scenario. So the supersized sandbox is an iteration on from the innovation sandbox, which allows you to, you know, test that your new processes worked well from a compliance perspective. The supersized sandbox is allowing organizations to, you know, like look at the higher volume stuff with generated data and see whether it can both cope with that as well as testing whether it still works within the regulatory framework. So I think, you know, certainly from a regulatory perspective, we're moving in the right direction. We're doing the right things, but there is a bit of catch up, and hopefully that regulation will catch up to allow you know, the higher volume and sophistication that we're now seeing through AI-generated fraud.
And I'm sure everyone listening will agree that there's a real pressure on us all to be in a state of continuous learning. And I would suspect you feel this more than most in your role as someone that's leading the way here with a lot of the things that we're talking about. So a question I've got to ask is, how do you self-educate? How do you keep up to speed with this pace of change that we're all experiencing right now?
So I think even this is evolving. So I think kind of years ago, a lot of the content was red. I think I went through a transition not so long ago, understanding, that you can listen to the information as well. So the previous times where, potentially when you're driving, when you're walking a dog, I started to utilize that time to listen and keep up to date. So, audio books, podcasts were a great way to do that. I think things are even moving on from that using AI. So, sometimes when I'm walking the dog, I'll be having a conversation with ChatGPT, asking specific questions, trying to understand, adapt my learning, trying to find out what I need to go research otherwise. I think we can also use AI ourselves to summarize reports. So company annual reports can now be kind of summarized. You can ask direct questions. Fraud reports such as the Experian Fraud and FinCrime report, you can put that into AI, you can ask it specific questions, you can start to understand it, you can cross-reference it, it really accelerates the learning. I think another kind of core area of learning is in understanding and reading the news. And I think we're also able now to use, large language models to better filter the content that we consume, saving a lot of time and allowing you to cover everything, which is all very relevant. So I think it's even interesting in this concept, we're able to accelerate our learning using the tools that are available on AI, which is exciting and useful.
Yeah, so many great examples there. And you're the second person to mention that about asking ChatGPT questions. I was speaking to someone a few weeks ago, and they went on a three-hour journey. And for that entire three-hour car journey, they were just talking back and forth with AI, exploring a topic that he wanted to learn more about. So, yeah, I would urge anyone listening to maybe give that a try. And for anyone listening, maybe they want to dig a little bit deeper on the report that we mentioned today, on your work, connect with you or your team. Well, do you like to point everyone?
So I think you can find us on our website, so www.experian.co.uk. Specifically, the fraud and identity section sits within solutions under the business section. Or you can find any of the team on LinkedIn. So quite happy for anyone to search for me, find me if you wanted to reach out directly. Happy to have a chat and answer any questions.
Fantastic. Well, we covered so much in a short amount of time today. I, for one, I'm going to be going off and researching that, probably with Sims and eSims. I think that's a great idea for an article that I'm going to take away from this conversation as well. But just thank you for shining a light on this stuff. Really appreciate your time today.
Yeah, great to be here. Thank you.
So what are your big takeaways from Paul's insights today? I think fraud prevention isn't a box-ticking exercise anymore. It is almost a balancing act between smarter defences, better data, and keeping trust intact for the real people whose lives can be upended almost overnight. And it feels like AI is raising the stakes on both sides. But my big takeaway is layered, dynamic, and adaptive strategies. They're no longer optional. And if fraud is evolving at machine speed, how quickly are we prepared to rethink the way that we protect our identities, whether we're in the office or whether at home? Food for thought indeed. It's something I'm going to be looking a bit deeper on, and there'll be an article on this subject very soon. I feel somewhat inspired after talking to my guest today. But over you, what did you take away from this? Let me know as always, techblogwriteroutlook.com, techtalksnetwork.com, and LinkedIn, X, Instagram, all those places, just Neil C. Hughes. Nice and easy to find.